At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the problem.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With Us, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 10, Episode 2, Let's Eat Cake. And now your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. No, I'm not going to do that. My only cake-related clip with Dumpsy the Clown and... The Pilgrims.
I was just going to say, it feels like a mistake to hear you say season 10. And it was in the comic sense, but here we are in season 10.
Don't worry, I'll play the cake clip at the end of the show, guys.
Okay, so good.
Just to give something to stick around for.
Hi, Sarah.
Because it's not Matt and Kelly's excellent relationship. Oh. Hello, Tara, Dave.
No, it's not. Yeah, Matt and Kelly are doing so bad. They're in the C plot. Shall we get to it?
Yes.
RC plot. Matt's not great at supporting Kelly. So Matt finds Kelly at the club, one of two places she ever goes. She wants to get going, but he makes her join him for one dance, apparently not noticing how very, very, very uncomfortable and stiff she looks.
Possibly because she has the most ridiculous hair yet.
Yeah.
It's incredible in the original sense of I don't believe it. It's so bad. Why?
Yeah.
Her hair is actually really, like, when it's just down and normal and she has, like, chunky lowlights, it looks cute.
It does, very. And it also feels like on the occasions when she does wear it down, she's, like, trying to compete with Gina and, like, she can't. But she's closer than she's been in seasons, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
Anyway, so Kelly, like, takes a few grudging dance steps before pointing out that they each drove there, so hint. And Matt is like, I'll follow you home. But then she pushes his hands off of her and says she's not ready for this. He says he didn't expect anything but to walk her to her door. She says she needs space and needs him to give it to her, which he agrees to while then putting his hands back on her hips, forcing her to remove them again and be emphatic in clip two.
I need it. I need it to feel safe again.
No.
Just, no.
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 All right, we agree. No. Kelly and Matt later are on the deck another night when she comes out with coffee, having just made him dinner. He says she should probably get some sleep, and she says she's in no hurry. He pointedly says he's not either and that she should know that. She says she does and volunteers that she's been going to her rape survivors group and really trying, but sometimes she just can't catch her breath. He says it's not her problem, it's theirs, which is kind of glib and easy for him to say, which may be why she doesn't bother to say anything in response. And so he leans in and asks her to help him understand how she feels. She gives him an amazing side eye, which you can see in the visual aids. By the way, someone brought this up on the forum. So just to make it clear, the visual aids do still exist. That's why we keep mentioning them. But they're embedded in the podcast posts. They're not a separate post anymore. So when you get to the podcast post on previously.tv or again with this 90210.com, just scroll down. That's where they are. Moving on. She takes a long beat and then reminds him of his having told her his apartment was burgled when he was in college. And they have this exchange in clip three.
They stole from you. They destroyed things you loved. And even though you knew that they had been caught and they weren't coming back.
The place just didn't feel right, so I moved.
Imagine that happening to your body. Not being able to leave it.
I want to be with you, and I don't see you any differently.
I do.
And you'll get past this.
I don't know how.
We'll work on it together. In fact, I have a couple of ideas, if you're interested.
Sure.
Okay, a few things. I don't think she needs to be told that he sees her the same way when she's just finished saying her body feels different to her. Like, listen to what she's saying, first of all, if you want to help.
Yeah, she's not looking for sign off, actually.
Right. Yeah. The way to be an ally here is to say, I am not putting any pressure on you to have sex with me. You tell me when you are ready, if you are. And I'm here if you want to talk about things, and I'm here if you don't. Like, right? I mean, I've never been in this position, but...
Yeah. Like, I have some ideas if you're interested. Like, what do you want her to say?
Right.
No, no one is interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Let her come up with her own ideas on her timetable and back off, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
So... one of Matt's great ideas is that he's taken it upon himself to buy Kelly a book about finding a way back to intimacy after trauma and to take them both to a seminar by the author. Oh, yay. So they enter a room where an extremely peppy guy is just getting started. Kelly is immediately grossed out, which I made a gif you can see in the visual aids as well. Like, he comes at her and she's like, oh, no. And that's even before he says his name is Gavin Masonis and the class is bye-bye to shyness. And so Kelly tells Matt she thinks they're in the wrong place, but Gavin is so pushy that there isn't a moment for them to excuse themselves gracefully. And the first exercise is passing an orange from chin to chin without using your hands, that old vacation Bible school thing. And Gavin's first victim is a man so shy he can't even manage to say his name. And who gets even more terrified when Gavin tells him he's supposed to pass the orange to Kelly. Because she is a woman, Kelly automatically starts trying to make him feel comfortable, even though one imagines this is the last thing she wants to do with a male stranger right now. And while this is annoying, I appreciated that this played out the way it would in real life with, like, the woman having to be accommodating. I don't know. Just something I noted.
Yeah.
So she takes the orange with aplomb and then is supposed to pass it to Matt, but she lets it fall and feels bad and he pretends not to be hurt. And after the seminar, Kelly says she has to go get David, but Matt has taken an orange and states that they can do this. And she kind of laughs, but also pretty obviously doesn't want to. And he insists because his new thing is refusing to take hints. She refuses some more, but then he puts the orange under his chin and she laughs that he looks stupid. Finally, she relents, successfully taking the orange from him before he immediately makes it weird again in clip four.
Tell me what to do.
Tell you what.
Shut up.
In this really unconscious way, you used to drape your arm around my neck. Now I can't stand being touched anywhere near my throat.
Okay, I understand.
Never sneak up behind me. That's how he attacked me.
Kelly.
But to hold me close makes me feel safe.
Sure.
I mean, sure. Like, this package contains two problems, as they say. And one of the problems is that their chemistry was exactly this kind of reluctant, awkward before this happened to her character.
Yeah.
Because the actor does not like him. And it's like, I mean... I'm not sure if this is, like, sometimes it's working sort of in concert with the writing for her, and other times it's working against it because it's like, is this actually being acted or is this just more of your all's shitty chemistry?
Right.
Like, I was listening to this clip and I was like, God, they've been together a long time.
Yeah.
And they don't like each other.
No.
Not to, like, they hate each other levels with Dylan, but they were also together for quite some time while evidently despising each other. So,
right. But they also had chemistry weird. To begin with. Dylan and Kelly did. At one point they did before it curdled. But yeah, these two have always been, like, they've been weird and tentative from the start. And then they just had to, like, you know, it felt like they had to write around that by having Dylan come back and like make her be all torn and stuff. But yeah.
Right. Ugh.
Anyway, eventually Kelly
almost done.
Kelly suggests to Matt that they dance at the club and seems to enjoy it. So great. That's where we leave them. On to the B plot. Gina takes her problems out on David while Donna also has a hard time at the club and Dylan has a hard time with his sponsee. A lot going on here. Let's get to it. David starts his plot line by bumming out all his radio listeners, bitching about how crappy his birthday plans are. To wit, he's getting a free teeth cleaning from his dad. I don't know. That made me laugh.
Which Mel should really charge for after all the like adventures with rent embezzlement a couple of seasons ago. But
you know what? True. Yeah. So Donna watches Noah flirting with Charisse, which Janet nicely claims doesn't mean anything. Hey, Donna, maybe don't go to Noah's workplace for a while if you're just going to be mooning at him the whole time. Whatever. She claims it's none of her business, which it isn't. And to Kelly's question, she says she hasn't told Noah that she and Wayne aren't together since there's no point. She ruined their relationship. He ruined it like 50 times before you did, but whatever. So the next day, Dylan shows up at David's with a check to cover his share of the bills. Lord Pissface pisses that he hasn't figured out what Dylan owes. But as Dylan says, he heard about David's upcoming teeth cleaning and thought they could do better. We see the check is for $1,000. David says it's too much, and when Dylan tells him to buy him a beer sometime, David tears up the check like the fucking drama queen he is and accuses Dylan of trying to buy his way out of his messes as usual. Let him? I don't know. Just take really? The money. It's still money.
Yeah, exactly.
Dylan doesn't really help himself by pointing out that David didn't see a gun to Gina's head. It was him getting back together with his girlfriend. Was it? Hasn't he said like 500 times that he didn't really love Gina and it was just convenient? I'm asking. Kelly calls just then to remind him about his very predictable birthday plans, and when he's pissily hung up, Dylan's on his way out, having left the door open and also left David a replacement check, because all 20 somethings walk around with their checkbooks on their person, sure. But this one David wisely just crumples. Back to the beach, where we learn Kelly's call was a cover. Janet, Steve, Donna, and Kelly are there planning a surprise party for David and sorting through a bunch of old production stills. I mean, candid photos. You can see the visual aids. Dylan is about to let himself back into his hotel room when an intoxicated woman getting manhandled out of there calls his name, and he recognizes her as Little Lucy Wilson. Gina comes out just then looking suspicious. Dylan makes introductions. Lucy also lived in the hotel as a kid, and she says she still does, slurring that she had a huge crush on Dylan. Dylan tries to intervene on her behalf with the cop, but Bob the cop ignores him and leads Lucy off, still complaining about the way he tore her room apart for a few joints. Dylan says he knows a lawyer and they'll meet her at the police station. Uh-oh, good luck, Lucy. So Donna goes to see Noah at the Welsh house to say she's sorry again for something she has no reason to be sorry about. And Noah, hostile, asks rhetorically if she feels better now. She hates how much she hurts him and wishes there was something she could say to make him feel better. And Noah gets even more hostile, which is a bad look, in clip 5.
We went out for a year and a half. I took out a lease on a house for us.
I know. I just got scared. I didn't know how to tell you.
So you sleep with somebody you don't even know? Because I got the point across. I got to tell you, it really did. I thought we were happy. I guess I was wrong.
I mean, look, if it's going to put an end to her slobbing around, making clown faces about him, I'm fine with it. Like, slamming the door in dumb baby's face, fine.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. Like, remember that time that you fucked Val when she was unable to consent? Remember that?
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great times.
Literally exactly what I have in my notes. At least the sex that Donna had was outside your relationship and consensual. Just saying.
Yeah.
So Gina's still working in Matt's office when Dylan comes up to say he talked to Lucy, who said the bail hearing went okay. Matt asks how Dylan knows her, and Dylan spews a bunch of brand new backstory about having lived at the hotel at the same time she did when he was in high school and she was 12 or 13. Her parents did the bi-coastal thing, so she raised herself, and then this happens, clip 6.
Well, that's a disaster.
That's how I was raised.
Exactly.
I mean, good line, and she's right, but we can probably agree that Bobby wasn't exactly covering herself in glory parenthood-wise either, and she was present, so
yeah,
just saying.
Exactly.
But the cops found pot and crystal meth in Lucy's room, but Matt thinks she's the kind of subject who might get an exceptionally tough sentence, as an example, because she's rich. It was enough meth that if she had had a scale, they could have charged her with trafficking. But if that's the case, would a scale have really made a difference either way? Like, it's not just about the weight. Like, she has to know how much it was. I don't know. That seems weird.
Don't know.
Okay. Gina returns to the beach apartment to drop off her keys and get some of her stuff. And when she's gone 4 feet away, Donna says this, clip 7.
You guys, Gina's the only one we didn't invite to David's surprise party. And I know we kicked her out of the apartment, but I mean, we don't have to exclude her from everything, right? Or am I being way too nice here?
You kicked her out of the apartment. There was no we, for the record. And of course, Kelly says she is being too nice because Kelly's a bitch, but that there's an invitation on the table so Donna can do what she wants, which is to throw it in the garbage and pout that she's definitely too nice. And Kelly smiles smugly and hatefully, which you can, of course, see in the visual aids.
I mean, if you really wanted to be a bitch, you would invite her because it's
honestly,
David.
And the party is terrible. It's and, at the club where you go all the time.
Please start using a trash can liner for your tiny, teeny, weeny little kitchen trash can that is the size of a suitcase. Like, it's so little.
Yeah.
It's the size of a carry-on. No good.
It's very small. After Lucy has slept off whatever bender she was on, she's put on a very virginal, tiny floral print t-shirt to meet Dylan in the hotel bar, thank him for paying her bail, and catch up. She swears she's learned her lesson about drugs. He exposits that she's not in school and asks if she has a job. She's snotty about the idea of folding $90 t-shirts at Fred Siegel, so Dylan returns to education, and Lucy claims that if Matt can get her off, maybe she'll buy a restaurant like Dylan did. And he tells her to aim higher. And Lucy reminisces in clip 8.
When you were in high school, I used to follow you up to the roof.
I didn't know that.
You'd get stoned with some girl or a friend and talk about philosophy. Well, I ran for student council as a nihilist, and I lost.
Yeah, well, you know, Nietzsche isn't exactly a school spirit kind of guy.
I wanted to be sitting next to you on that ledge.
You didn't miss anything.
I'm not saying I was in love or anything. It's more, I wanted to be just like you.
Wrong. Nietzsche was president of Glee Club. We all know.
Also, nihilist? Who gave her that line reading? Vincent Young and the Mozart Club?
Huh?
Who's Neil?
Oh, God.
Oh, Lucy.
Speaking of aiming higher, Donna goes to the club, which is playing the hottest hits of the day, clip 9.
Yeah! Get down with your bad self, Neil.
Oh. Oh, boy. Donna is there to talk to Noah about David's surprise party. Kelly already told him all about it. Donna meant the menu, and Noah's like, talk to Nat, he's catering it. So Donna asks about a buffet, and Noah testily says he's going to cordon off a nice area and that it's all set. Like, this is the one and only time they haven't shut the club down for the night. That's all David rates. I agree. Donna gets all wounded at the thought that they can't even talk to each other now, and Noah's like, nope. And Donna apologizes again. Some more, and Noah snits that every time she says it's she's sorry, it means a little less. Elsewhere, Gina is sitting at the bar rejecting some guy's overtures when David notices her, and this happens, clip 10.
Anybody out there hooking up on the rebound? Here's a little checklist that I learned from a friend of mine, a girl named Tina. You're really pretty. Number one, they need saving. Number two, you're the only one who can do it. And number three, they're so grateful they could just about have sex with you. But not quite.
Gross!
This incel motherfucker really needs to shut the fuck up.
This is
forever.
So gross and toxic. And like, oh. At no point, I mean, I doubt that a comeuppance is coming, but at no point in this episode does anyone say like, it's really fucked up, the kind of shit you're saying. Like,
yeah.
no one owes you anything. And your characterization of what happened is not accurate either. Like, she never said you were the only one who could anything.
Yeah. I just... ugh. And no one even points out, like, this is sort of the tip of the shitberg that is his behavior.
Yeah.
But no one even points out, like, this is embarrassing for you to keep dwelling on this when you guys were hanging out for, like...
A day.
Like, you're not 14. Stop putting your shit on Front Street, at least. Never mind the fact that it's toxic. Stop.
In addition to which, like, also way to, like, advertise to all of your listeners, like, oh, never, ever date this guy. He is sick. Anyway. Obviously, Gina comes storming in to confront him. He accuses her of having used him to make Dylan jealous, which we know is not the case. And she protests that she needed a friend, and David knew that and acted like one. And then she says this, clip 11.
You know, David, if you did that just to get something in return, then you're the fake. Not me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
It's called your right hand and some Lubriderm. Get the fucking neck. You're not owed anything.
So as soon as David has stormed out of an adult discussion about Steve's future, which we will get to, Noah tells them all that he just booked Christina Aguilera, LOL, and that everyone should get to the club at 7. I, at this point, thought it was a joke. Spoiler alert, it's not. She really does appear in this episode.
Only reason that I thought this wasn't going to be the, like, you just missed her, you just missed Chrissy on the phone thing, is that I happened to see her in the credits and was like, and then I went back because I was like, is this a imitator and it's spelled a little differently? No, it's her.
Yep. So this is the first Gina has heard about the party, but she waits for Noah and Steve to leave before asking Dylan about it. Dylan admits there is a party. Donna's hosting and wants David to have a good time, and they discuss it in clip 12.
So we're not going, right? You're going.
Yeah, briefly.
Let me just get this straight. So David's pissed off at me because of you, and you're invited, but I'm not.
I have known David for 10 years, and this has got to stop. You being there is not going to help matters, and Gina, you don't even want to go.
No, I don't want to go.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, no, you don't.
But also, like, the point that neither of them makes is like, oh yeah, David is forgiving Dylan, or at least less mad at him because he's a guy and it's expected and blah, blah, patriarchy, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the bar, where two people trying to stay sober should definitely spend as much time as possible, Lucy thanks Dylan for introducing her to Matt, because if not for him, she doesn't know where she'd be. Dylan says probably in rehab, where she should go anyway. Apparently, she caught a lucky break with an illegal search and seizure of her room. She tries to laugh off the meth as experimentation that's over now, and Dylan starts lecturing her again about school or work and getting her life back on track, as if he wasn't exactly as aimless as she is, like, 2 months ago. And when she asks whether college turned his life around, he has to admit that he dropped out. She purrs that it's because they're not like other people, and he agrees. Clip 13.
I am an ex-heroin addict, and you're speeding right now. Don't try to lie to me. I can tell your eyes are dilated. You're pretty much wired for sound.
God, go to school, get a job. You know, you drop by a bar you own and call it a career. I'll go to college the second you do. How's that?
I go to Narcotics Anonymous twice a week. Why don't you go with me tonight?
I remember you going to AA, too. One another, or is this lecture over?
Some people can handle it.
Another thing we have in common.
Lucy!
Yeah!
Lucy!
Thank God,
you.
Someone, finally! Oh my God!
Jesus. And, like, why are you lecturing her about her substance abuse in a bar? Build a coffee shop set at Eclipse. What the fuck?
Take her to the Peach Pit. You already have that set. On the street somewhere, a crispy curled Gina calls David, claiming she got a flat tire. She doesn't have AAA and can't get hold of Dylan. She tells him she's super close to his house and is kind of freaked out to be alone on the dark street. David says he'll be right there, and Gina hangs up and opens the valve to let some air out.
And David pinches the bridge of his nose.
Yeah, I guess this setup is to remind us that when David says he is a nice guy, he really is. Don't buy it. Dylan finds Lucy in the hotel lobby and gives her a college course calendar. He's going back next week. She was making a point, she says, and he says he is also. He is as lost as she is, and they're both going back to school. Oh, can't wait for this payoff. So then Kelly goes to David's to pick him up for his birthday dinner, but of course he's not there. He's helping change Gina's tire when his phone rings. She picks it up. Kelly doesn't recognize her voice, and Gina takes advantage, hanging up and telling David it was a wrong number. So, harried, Kelly shows up at the Peachwood After Dark without David and tells Donna, Janet, and Matt about the phone call. A message from David on her home machine about helping Gina with her flat tire has helped her figure out who answered David's phone. Donna tells Kelly to call again, but now David's phone is off. Janet just wants cake. Team Janet. Kelly wants to know how Gina even found out about the party, and when Steve admits they were talking about it at Dylan's, Donna and Kelly both turn on him bitchily in a gif you can see in the visual aids. Steve doesn't even remember why he's supposed to hate her. Ha ha, Team Steve.
Seriously.
Speaking of, David tells Gina to get Dylan a pager so that he can be on call for shit like this, not David. But Gina ignores this advice to enthuse about how grateful she is to him and offering to buy him dinner. She remembers that he has dinner plans, and when David asks if she doesn't think it's weird that he called the restaurant and his parents weren't even there, Gina quickly suggests that she buy him one drink. But now that his task is over, he's back to incel self-pity in clip 14.
Gina, why would I want to hang out with you? You know what? Why would you want to spend the evening with me and then go home to Dylan? That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Once again, I just thought we were friends.
No, you thought you could call me and I'd come running. That's exactly what I did. You know, I'd say that this is it and this is the last time, but the truth is, if you called me and you needed me, I'd be there. So, you know, you gotta stop. I can't do this anymore.
Okay, if this is really such a big deal, it was half an hour ago, too. Like, it's not her fault you can't stick to your own boundaries, ass. Anyway, Gina asks again for one small quick drink, and David refuses, but then she smiles and he smiles back. And at the club, Noah introduces Christina Aguilera, the real one. And holy shit, it's really, really her. She is a baby as she sings her still best song, Genie in a Bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan shows up and gets the latest on the party fail. And then we see the place that Gina has led David to is the Peach Pit After Dark. And he calls it a very inventive choice because he doesn't know, like we do, that this dumb show has three sets. But he seems to be in a better mood, at least. Gina says he's the nicest guy she knows, even when he's trying to be mean, and he can only turn 24 once, so he should get in there. And he kind of laughs, and she sheepishly says she likes who she is when she's with him. Why? So he kisses her, and she kisses him back, and then he smiles and says, too bad you're not with me, but not really in a mean way for once. He backs away smiling and asking if she's coming, and she tells him to go get them a table, and she'll be right in. And he's still walking to the door when she starts her car and drives out past him, not stopping when he calls her name. I don't know why she did all this for him. Like, I really don't. Like, was it so important for her that she spent time with him on his birthday, even if she wasn't going to go to the party? Like, is she trying to make peace with him? Did it work? I don't. It's also dumb.
I got the feeling that maybe she thought she was going to try to, like, take him away from the party, but then she changed her mind and decided to be a nice person. And then there's this whole like thing after he kisses her where she's like, it's like that moment in Superman 2 when he has kissed Lois Lane and she's just sort of like, suspended in the middle of the office from the super kiss. And it's definitely just between the actors who are falling in love. And it was sort of like cute, but you're also like, ew, it's David.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, season 10. It's a really weird place, y'all. Really weird.
So David goes inside and sees the big birthday sign and all his other friends wishing him a happy birthday, and he pretends to be happy. And by the way, they found a like grade 9 photo of Brian Austin Green and made a standee of it for his party attended by the same 8 people he hangs out with every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So for some reason, Kelly demands a speech, and for some reason, he gives it in clip 15.
Oh, this is humiliating. And great. Oh boy, fair warning. I've known some of you for a long time, too. You know, Every breakup, every bad haircut. No offense, Steve. Every move we've made, we've done together in some way or another. And this is really a surprise because I was expecting to be with my family tonight. And the weird thing is that I am. And I couldn't be happier about it.
Oh, my God. Are we going to get one of these valedictory season 10 speeches in every episode? We know it's the end.
God. Yeah. Also, that was, I mean, we're going to be treated to some deeply non-credible line readings over the next few weeks. And this is right down there.
Mm-hmm.
Awful.
But then there's another Christina Aguilera song to eat up time and everybody's happy. Lining up for cake, David tells Dylan that Gina told him to say hi, which she did not. Dylan hopes that means things are cool with him and David now. And David snits, "I'm sure you do," like the bitch he is. Dylan comes back to the hotel room and kisses Gina awake, telling her she did a good thing tonight. There's a knock on the door. And of course, it's Lucy. She feels sick because she's going through withdrawals. She found a rehab center that will take her in the morning, and Dylan tells her she can stay in his suite until then. It's a 2-week program. You know how it only takes 2 weeks to get off meth. And then she's going back to Wesleyan. She's going to hold Dylan to their deal, and he agrees to send her his report card if she reciprocates. Who cares? On to the A plot. It takes getting knocked up to free Janet from the plot basement. Up at the bar at the club, Janet asks which of the drinks there is mineral water, whereupon all the guys present feel free to take long, unsubtle looks at her newly pregnant lady cleavage, which is glowing. And when she clocks them all for ogling her, Steve covers by saying she looks beautiful in her dress. She takes off and Steve classily tells his friends she had a boob job. Like, when would she have without him knowing? As Noah points out, they're sleeping together. But Steve says he hasn't been sleeping with her lately. More discussion of real versus fake boobs ensues and is entirely gross and stupid. Steve is frustrated that Janet would hide something like this from him. Dylan says she's probably embarrassed because she doesn't want Steve to know she's vain. Noah, the world's best boyfriend, states that Janet must know Steve loves her new boobs. Matt posits that Janet's new boobs have nothing to do with Steve, but Steve looks up to see her across the bar, glancing at another dude, and pouts that she's gearing up to dump him. And in the midst of David party planning, Steve asks Kelly and Donna whether Janet has said anything about him. Kelly dodges, but promises that if Janet had told her she wanted to dump him, Kelly would tell him. We find out she slept at the girls' apartment the night before, and Kelly goes into her room to chat with Janet. She couldn't face an empty apartment again. Whose apartment? Because the baby just started moving. Kelly encourages her to tell Steve or her parents, but Janet is worried about what all of them will say. Donna comes in to say Steve left and she doesn't think Janet should break up with him, which cues Janet to tell her that's good because she's having his child. And Donna and Kelly are both very nice and tell her to move into Gina's old room. So then Janet and Steve are having a picnic, at which Steve testily notes that she's not hungry. Janet says it's because she has something to tell him, which she prefaces by assuring him that she wants to be with him, and conversation at cross purposes sitcomfully ensues in clip 16.
I didn't make this as like a last meal for us or anything.
So, this change I've noticed.
I just hope it'll bring us closer.
Oh, they will.
They?
Janet, I think you should know. I was very happy with the way things were.
But, Steve, there's no going back now.
I respect the fact that it was your choice, but I think we should get a view of the situation from another angle, perhaps.
Which angle?
Close up in bed. Oh, Janet, they look great.
You think I had implants?
Oh, yeah.
That's your fantasy, Steve. Do you know what my fantasy is? Seeing you evolve past the age 14.
What?
Forget it, okay? Let's just go.
I just hate this entire subplot so much. I hate it so much.
It's very dumb. So Janet recaps the disastrous picnic to Kelly and Donna, closing by saying she can't raise two children. And Kelly lectures that it's not fair to judge Steve on how he might react to the news. And Donna notes that he used to date a woman who had a child. We're all impressed. You watched the show 2 seasons ago. Steve and Janet are then at the Beat office wrapping up an issue. She holds her lower back and sighs, and Steve crabs that if she's not feeling well, she should just say so and not blame it on him. And they have this exchange, clip 17.
Never specifically asked for bigger bosoms.
Steve, the reason my body's different is because I'm pregnant.
Say it again.
I'm pregnant.
Oh, that's unexpected. Don't worry, we'll manage somehow. Oh, Janet. Why'd you find out?
Look, I know this isn't what you want if we were discussing options, but the fact is I'm gonna have this baby, okay?
I realize we're both a little shocked. You took one of those home pregnancy tests, the pink and stripes and X's and...
A doctor confirmed it.
You went to a doctor? Janet, I know I've been crazy around here, but I would have gone to a doctor with you. When'd you go to a doctor?
3 months ago. When I first realized I was late.
3 months ago? That puts you in your...
In my 16th week.
We've been together every day. Every minute, every second, for the last 3 months. How could you not tell me?
I'm sorry.
You, who are always lecturing me about right and wrong, you do this to me.
I didn't do anything.
Except go ahead with a pregnancy, which we didn't discuss.
It's not like I planned this, Steve.
Why don't I believe you?
This is not the Steve we know. I don't buy this.
Yeah. Also, how, like, whose side are we supposed to be on? Because I'm not on Janet's side. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, yes, she should have said something before for sure. But also, like, this reaction is not, this is not the soft, cuddly Steve that has he's turned into since high school.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And I would also say that he's being written, I think, with like reacting to information that he's supposed to only have had for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's acting
yes.
like, you know, he immediately went to like, wait, 3 months ago? And
right.
also, this is not how Janet, as she's ever been written,
would behave,
would play this ever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
The whole thing is like a character assassination of both of them and is completely pointless except to haul them into, like, out of their plot silo, which isn't really working anyway. So,
right.
Ugh, God. And it just keeps going. Anyway, let's get this over with.
Yeah. So the next day, Steve has convened his confederacy of dunces in Dylan's hotel room to rant about Janet. Gina comes out having eavesdropped and eagerly says that Matt can get Steve out of this by making Janet take a DNA test. And I realize Gina has reason to oppose Janet now that she's moved into Gina's old room. But this is so ridiculous that Noah has to be the one to say Steve knows the baby is his. Like, come on. So David asks what that means legally. And Matt says that Steve is financially responsible if Janet asks. Steve does the face covering thing that normally David does and admits that she hasn't asked him for anything. Gina then suggests that Janet might just take the baby and run, since there's no reason for Steve to think that Janet needs his money. She's certainly been content with whatever pittance she's gotten out of him as a paycheck, as we know. But Matt says if that happens, Steve can make a case for custody. Once again, Noah, of all fucking people, is the voice of reason, pointing out that the baby's not even born yet. Matt offers to talk with Steve at the house later, and David, not even looking up from his magazine, mumbles that Steve shouldn't get involved in the child's life if he's going to resent it. Dylan tries to interject, but their fight from the B plot oozes in here in clip 18.
Your father wasn't here when you came into this world, Steve. Don't make
You know what? Let me just cut you off before you say something stupid, all right? He's 25. He doesn't have your millions, and he's working 12 hours a day trying to make something of himself. So you know what? Compared to his responsibilities, Dylan, you have none. Steve, don't get back into this, all right?
Steve is also rich. He may not be independently wealthy, but Rush is, so shut up. He'll be fine.
Also, even if you weren't, shut up, David.
Also, we've seen no evidence that Steve is working 12 hours a day doing anything.
Yeah. Like,
every time we see him do anything work related, it's like, well, we have to close the issue in 40 minutes. Like, whatever.
And it's always Janet doing it. So
exactly.
Whatever.
Anyway, speaking of the beat, at the office, Steve sorts mail and glares at Janet. She finally stomps over to him and demands that he hear her out. She was scared. She wasn't sure she should have the baby. Steve grits that these are things they could have discussed. She wasn't even sure she could carry the baby to term and repeats what we already heard her tell Kelly about miscarriages running in her family. And Steve is very understanding. Just kidding. He's a dick. In clip 19.
So you waited until it's too late to do anything about it to tell me you're having my child?
Too late to do what?
To discuss our options.
Would you have told me to have an abortion?
Maybe if I had time to process this, I could be happy about it. But I don't. And now I never will.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I know that we're supposed to think that he's a dick. And yeah, he is being a dick. But like, it was 3 months. What the fuck? Like, what? I mean.
Yeah. Now I never will is a little. Right.
Well, yeah.
A little melodramatic. Like, again, as you said, this is just to prolong. Like, both of them are doing this for plot reasons, not because it would ever organically arise from what we know of other characters in either of their cases
or anyone who's ever lived, basically. Like,
right,
she's not Sontae Kimes. Settle down.
Right. And also, like, this is the whole thing where it's like, I'm going to pretend this isn't happening until it's too late for me to get an abortion. Like, she's not on Teen Mom. Sorry. Yeah, like, this is not how someone would really behave. Anyway, Janet later follows Steve into the bathroom at the club to tell him things are going to change and he's going to have to accept it. And when he says he just wishes she had told him sooner, she says she does, too. She didn't plan this baby, but she does want it. And if he doesn't, she'll understand. She won't make a single demand on him. Insert my usual teen mom framing of, you know, the concept of going after a father of an unplanned child for child support. Like, ugh, that's always how they talk about it on that show, at least in the earliest going of when the baby is arriving. And it's like, people have responsibilities. It's not vindictive. Like, everybody stop talking about it like that, but whatever. Janet's closer is that it's his choice how much he's involved in the child's life. So then Matt walks through the dark Walsh house to find Steve rudely shooting baskets in the driveway at 3 a.m. It's not a quiet activity. Matt asks what Steve is going to do about Janet, and Steve admits he doesn't know. No one really believes he's going to ditch his child, so this cliffhanger is incredibly dumb, but that's where we leave it. Mm-hmm. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Matt, not in his own storyline, but for actually being effective in Lucy's case.
Yeah, I'm going to say Lucy.
for clocking Dylan on his beer drinking?
Yes.
Fair. Very fair. Very good choice. Least valuable player. Oh, David.
Yeah, for sure.
Such a pill. let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. It's bad to invent backstory for your character in season 10.
In that backstory, it's dangerous to do drugs on the edge of a hotel roof.
It's dangerous to drink beer when you're supposed to be sober. And we've also seen him drink like liquor and wine as well. So are you sober or not? Make up your mind.
And it's bad and dangerous to lecture a prospective sponsee about getting her life together in the bar you own and run shittily, in which you should not be drinking alcohol.
Well, they're at the hotel bar, but yes, still, fair point. And we didn't really talk about it, but his hair is bad, which you can see in the visual aids, so that makes five.
It is bad. Oh, boy. Okay, next time on Again With This, Janet and Steve's trip above ground from the subplot sub-basement continues not to withstand daylight scrutiny, but it's a buffet of sensical delights compared with Donna's take on menswear. Come for the haircut Dylan finally got, stay for the fight between me and Tara over who gets to be boyfriend-girlfriend with the CU Dean of Admissions.
Yeah!
You'll find out. You will be fighting to keep your breakfast down when you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at againwiththis90210.com, and you can follow this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm horrifying photo collage Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is disputed invitation Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is addiction groupie David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Looking for something festive for the holidays? Your participating Carvel Ice Cream store has these beautiful ice cream cakes for the holidays. Tom the Turkey, who speaks turkey language as bad as I speak English. Priscilla and John, the lovers who never did find Plymouth Rock. And then we have Dumpy the Pumpkin. How do you like these specially molded gift cakes for the holidays? At your participating Carvel Ice Cream store. Thank you and have a happy holiday.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.